Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Peter King will be with us here in about 15 minutes. Peter is in New York City, of course, the Monday morning quarterback, the best in the business on a national level. He spent some time with Peyton Manning right after the Broncos game against the Patriots. And I'm going to ask Peter directly, does he think Peyton is done after the Super Bowl? So we're going to talk about that and just the way that it's all laid out with Peter King with the Cardinals. I've got to ask Peter if Carson Palmer can ever recover from this. Peter's done a lot around Carson. And, you know, yesterday was the clean-out day. They do locker clean-out days. And at locker clean-out day, it's usually met with trash bags and guys saying everything is great and there's no problems and we're going to get them next year and we're all disappointed and all that. Eric was out there yesterday. And did you find the same stuff as I just said, that that's what they were saying, that everything was just fine, copacetic and all that?
I think for the most part, they were upbeat. People were excited.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, they won 13 games. They made it to the NFC Championship. Yes, they got destroyed, but there is reason for optimism. The theme was the Cardinals have arrived nationally. Like, when they're out and about, it's not just, oh, the same Arizona Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals have won 10 or more games 3 straight years. So it's safe to say that the foundation has been laid to take the next step. Now, I know you and I are a little bit cynical of that because there's going to be...
Cynical?
There's going to be lots of changes, and there are going to be some areas that need to be addressed this offseason, particularly up front with a young, explosive pass rusher. But again, when you take a minute and just sort of take a step back and look at the big picture, I think it was a very good season.
Yeah, I guess. You know, my stance has been it's Super Bowl or bust, but I can't just pile on and say they were a failure this year. I thought they had a lot of things go their way. They're fortuitous on a lot of fronts. And I'm going to ask Peter about this too, Eric. Are they a nice little team, okay, or are they an elite team? Because I think they're a little bit more than a nice little team, but I myself don't see them as an elite team. They were just too dang inconsistent. There were too many times where I'd watch them play, and I would look at them and say, man, can they put somebody away? They are making mistakes that they shouldn't make. And you know, the injury thing, injuries catch up to everybody in the league. You know, you'd rather start the year out with the Super Bowl and have the two teams that finished with the best records last year actually play with a full deck of cards. But that's not how it works in sports. You got to get through it. If Chris Johnson is able to play, if Tyrann Mathieu is able to play, is it a different looking game? Sure it is, but that's not how the rules apply. So I think that the Carson story, how the organization handles the, not now, not at the combine, but how they handle the NFL calendar when it comes into free agency and how they handle the draft will be very interesting to me, because it will clearly show their belief internally. Okay, do they internally really believe that they have the quarterback here for the next couple of seasons? I know that there's this window that we talk about, but do you need to accelerate getting the next person in line? Personally, the way the NFL works and the way Bruce Arians coaches, I think you would have quarterbacks that are about to become free agents lining up and just begging to come here to play. Why would you not want to come to Arizona and play? You think about that question 20 years ago, the list was a long, long list of why you would not want to come here. Give me any good reason now why you would not want to come to Arizona and play football. At any position, I might add. If you're a running back, they run the football. They use their running backs. If you're out there recruiting a free agent to be running back, why would you not want to come to Arizona? If you're a tight end, why would you not want to come to Arizona with Bruce Arians' offense? If you're a wide receiver, why would you not want to come to Arizona with this offense? If you're a quarterback, why would you not want to come here and play for Bruce Arians and Tom Moore? Assuming they're here, you know, what, 2, 3, 4 more years? I don't know. So there's a lot of positives about playing for the Cardinals. And if the Cardinals in this offseason make a move at quarterback, and I'm not going to just throw some random name out there, but let's say it's a veteran who is established, who's just run out of chances with other organizations. And there's going to be those guys out there. And that guy needs a fresh coat of paint, a fresh change of scenery. And if the Cardinals decide to go that way, then internally, clearly they say, you know, it's been a nice run, but is Carson Palmer the Carson Palmer of Cincinnati where he gets him to this point, and that's about it. So this will be a great offseason on that front. We're going to switch over to do a little bit, starting to put our toe in the water a little bit on some other things that just have been off the radar because of the Cardinals, and also let you know that National Letter of Intent Day is a week from tomorrow. Tomorrow is the biggest day in college football, and we do a ton of college football. That's what is our driving. That's our heartbeat is things going on in Arizona. It doesn't matter what sport, but we do quite a bit on college and high school football because I think they're completely underserved. I just think that you have a demand out there and that nobody has really come out and said, we own this. And I'm not saying we do. We are Sprouts. We are Whole Foods in a world of Walmart. That's what I tell people. You know, that's what we do here at Sports 360. So we're going to do some recruiting stuff. The top defensive player in the state on the defensive line had already committed, and now he's looking at a Pac-12 school, took a visit to a Pac-12 school. So we're going to get into that a little bit later on in the show. I watched most of the Warriors in San Antonio last night. It was over on NBA TV. And there's not many games that will get my attention, especially in January in the NBA. Most nights NBA games in January are just dreadful. I kind of think Greg Popovich took last night's game off too. If you look at the numbers and how much their starters played, they didn't play much, and Golden State just crushed them last night. Steph Curry wiped Kawhi Leonard all over the floor. Steph Curry does that to everybody. Steph Curry is must-see. I'd rather watch Steph Curry than LeBron James, myself. You, Eric, do you watch? Are you in that mode?
I like them both. They're such different players.
But do you stop when the TV stops? Like Warriors Spurs, because I could have watched the Cavs in Minnesota last night, and I just didn't care. There's something about watching LeBron where it's not as much must-see for me as watching Steph Curry is.
You don't want to see how the Tyronn Lue era plays out in Cleveland?
Well, I know how that's going to play out if they win.
You just shrug your shoulders and look down. So clearly that really doesn't push any of your buttons.
No, they're a team that get back to me with most of these matchups in April. Because last night, Duncan didn't play. LaMarcus Aldridge played very few minutes, comparatively speaking. And it just seems like, you know, Greg Popovich was sticking his middle finger at the NBA last night saying, we're not going to make a big deal out of this. It's just not who we are. We'll get back to you when it comes to late May when we meet this team again.
You've been on an NBA floor numerous times, so you know the cheat areas for the three-pointers are in the corners. That's technically the closest NBA three-pointers in the corners.
Right.
I flipped on the game last night, and Steph Curry was the longest three-pointer is the top of the circle. He was about, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet behind the top of the circle, yeah. Three-pointer. And on SportsCenter, you know, later on they're saying that's about like a 34-foot shot. And he shoots it like it's a free throw. I mean, you're running out of adjectives to define that guy. I mean, he's just, you're right. Every time they play, SportsCenter is just like, thank you.
Oh, sure.
Get the Steph Curry package ready, and we'll run it in the very first segment of the show.
Because we could lead the show off with who the new defensive line coach is for the Texans, or Steph Curry is playing. Because they're going to do one or the other. They're either going to lead with NFL and say, big breaking news out of Jacksonville, they've hired so-and-so to be their linebacker coach, and you're looking at that saying, just stick a fork in my eye.
Yeah, the Patriots fired their offensive line coach.
Right. I mean, just
get that on the crawl ASAP.
That's an A segment. No, it's not. It is for people back there if you're just chasing clicks but not chasing content. That's crazy. But, yeah, Steph Curry is like watching Magic Johnson. When I grew up, I'm one of those guys that in 79 when Magic played against Bird, I'm a senior in high school. No, I'm not a senior in high school. I'm a freshman in high school. I graduated in 83. I'm in high school. And I remember watching Indiana State and Michigan State, and it just turned my world upside down. So I saw Magic come into the league. I was at his game in San Diego where Kareem makes a skyhook, his first ever game. And Magic goes over and jumps in his arms. And Donald Sterling's drinking champagne with some sketch-looking girls over next to him. That was Donald Sterling. And they're playing the dumpy San Diego Sports Arena, which, by the way, is still a dump. And my life never looked back in basketball because I had Magic and Bird. Steph does not have a yin to his yang that he goes up against. There's nobody that I look at. Tony Parker against Steph Curry doesn't do it for me. I'd like to see somebody come along that could really push him. And if the Warriors are playing the Heat, I don't want to see Steph Curry abuse Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade can't move anymore. If the Warriors are playing against Kobe, Kobe can't move anymore. He's not going to be here much longer. So if he plays against Russell Westbrook, I'll watch that because that's like two fighters in the ring. That's Mayweather-Pacquiao type of thing. And that's fun. That's fun. So last night was great. It was a great sports night.
Jeff Passan, who does great work for Yahoo on the baseball front, tweeted last night, "I never got to see Pistol Pete Maravich play, but Steph Curry, from what I was told, is a lot like Pistol Pete." That was his comparison of the two.
Remember Jason
icons.
Williams, White Chocolate?
Uh-huh. Of course.
Okay, so he's not neither one of those players, but he had a little bit of Maravich, and I didn't see Maravich.
I didn't
I was
either,
too young, but
yeah.
But I would go watch YouTube. Like, if you guys want to do something cool when there's a slow sports night, like tonight's kind of a slow sports night, unless you're really into Sixers Suns, and then you really have to be into Sixers Suns, go Google Pete Maravich and watch what he did. That's a good point that you bring up. And then go watch Magic Johnson. Jason Williams had some of that pizzazz about him, but he wasn't a very good player. He's just an average NBA guy. You see Steph and... gosh, he's a much better shooter than Magic, but Magic was big. Magic Johnson was like Cam Newton, if you think about it. Magic Johnson was 6'9", leading the break. Magic Johnson was posting up point guards because that's what he was.
He made himself a good shooter, though, towards the end of his career.
Towards the end of his career, but, you know, he was able to go inside out. People remember the Sixers-Lakers finals where Magic goes down low and does baby hooks. I mean, and against the Celtics where he used his little hook shot. It's fun to watch Curry. That's my rant on that. All right. So Peter King is going to be with us here in a minute. And then we have Paul Coro. Now, there's been a story here in our community at some point, whether it's today or I may write about it. There's been a story in our community over at Desert Vista High School involving six girls that has made national news and has completely embarrassed our community and embarrassed this school, which is a very good school. And if you don't want me to talk about it, then I'm the wrong guy for you. Okay, I'm just the wrong show. But when something like this happens within our community, I'm going to get into that a little bit later on in the show as well. And it's just troubling to me. Paul Coro will be with us from Philadelphia with the Suns too. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Now Peter King with us, SI.com senior NFL writer, the Monday Morning Quarterback. He joins us via Skype from New York City. If you have not checked out Monday Morning Quarterback, you are missing out on tremendous content. They found a guy that has seen every Super Bowl in Maine. How does that work?
What we're doing at the MMQB, that is we're, for the next couple of weeks, Brad, we're going from coast to coast in a large SUV. We've got a video man named John DiPietro. We've got two writers. Now we've got Jenny Varentis and Kaylin Kaler. Robert Mays is going to join them in Detroit. He's up there doing a story on the 49ers dynasty beginning in Pontiac, Michigan, at a stadium that's going to be torn down in the spring, in the old Pontiac Silverdome. But you're right. We started in Kennebunkport, Maine. And in Kennebunkport, there's a guy who is one of eight people, non-media people, who's non-league people, who've been to every Super Bowl. And so Kaylin Kaler went and found him in this sort of dead tourist town, which is where he's lived, and just sort of said, why? Why do you do it? And I guess, why would anybody go to the Super Bowl every year if they could? Because it's fun.
Finding a guy like that, though, that's another story over a beer or a coffee when you're here in Arizona. Okay. Yeah. So back in August, if I would have said to you, Carolina, Denver, could be Manning's last game, Cam Newton bursts on the scene, would you have bought that? Is this the best matchup if you were to look back on the season?
Well, first of all, I mean, this is really – funny, I just almost had the lead to a story written by this guy who I was out walking my dog in New York City, and we've had a lot of snow here, so the sanitation is piled up. So I was walking my dog, and the guy said, "Hey, Peter King," and he came over and said, "What do you think of this game?" And we were just talking, and he goes, "I really want Peyton to win because then he can ride off into the sunset. But if Cam wins, it's like Peyton passing the torch to the new guy." And I said, "God, you just wrote my story for me. That's beautiful." But that's what it'll be, I think, regardless of, you know, who wins. You know, there's a great story regardless of who wins. And I was with Manning after the game the other night for a little while. Brad, I was in Denver. And one of the interesting things is I honestly think that he has, if I can play amateur shrink, okay, the whatever 6 or 7 weeks that he was off, you know, that he didn't play, when he was taken out of the Kansas City game in mid-November, and then he was off until basically the last week. And I think he learned something there, or something was driven home to him. And that is, hey, listen, there's another way to win. It just doesn't have to be all me. Because I think his whole career, look back to 1998, where he gets drafted and he goes to Indianapolis, and they go 3-13 that first year. And Bill Polian basically is building a team then around the quarterback, forever building around the quarterback. So they had some decent defenses, but they never had a great defense. Well, what is it like now when you have a great defense and you're saying to your quarterback, hey, listen, just don't lose the game.
Right.
You know, don't turn it over. You know, be smart. Don't make decisions where, you know, you're thrown into double coverage. Never do that again. And so I think Manning has really learned that. And it really is the moral of the story right now when I look at this game.
Do you think it's his last game, Peter, today as we're sitting here talking?
I think it's his last game, win or lose. That's my gut feeling. I know nothing. I have no inside story. He's been extremely careful to not say anything to anybody. In fact, after the game, my first question to him, Brad, we were alone after he finished his press deal, and I said, did the thought occur to you at all today when you ran out onto the field, either for warmups or the game, this is the last time in my life I'm going to be doing this, or it might be the last time I'm going to be doing this? And he goes, I'm not going there. And he said it didn't occur to him, but he clearly was not going to go there. He wants to just play the games. And then after the games are over, look, he has to know deep down what he's going to do. I would be surprised, win or lose, if this was not his last game.
Peter King with us, the Monday morning quarterback. Let's switch over to Carson Palmer, because, Peter, this question is going to hang over Arizona from now until the start of training camp and even during next year regular season. He could go 15-1 next year, and I don't think it's going to mean a whole lot if he can't get this team over the hump. Can a guy like Carson Palmer recover from such a horrific performance on the biggest stage of his career?
I think he can recover, but it's, you know, I think the wound is always the freshest in the hours and in the days after it happens. And I can just imagine how sick he felt on the plane on the way home, and looking at him talking after the season in his little meeting with the press yesterday, you can just tell he's just sick about it. And I'm sure all the fans now having the back of their minds, let's see. You know, is this guy going to be able to be a clutch player for us next year, or is this going to ruin him? I mean, personally, knowing him the way I do, I think he'll probably use this as motivation. But again, Brad, you know, the tough thing about this is that it's exactly what was driving the Bengals all year with Andy Dalton. You know, it was great to see Andy Dalton play well in the regular season, but even better than he had played before. But the bottom line is the regular season is not what anybody's going to be concerned about. And people in Arizona are rightfully so going to be concerned with knowing how is Carson Palmer going to play in January, not how he's going to play in October.
Are they an elite team, in your opinion, that makes it all the way to the NFC title game, or were they just a nice team? I'm kind of on the nice team and a little above that. They weren't this elite group.
I think one of the things about the Cardinals is that, you know, they had a big injury on defense that changed them a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, when they lost Tyrann Mathieu, in my opinion, I thought that they were going to be able to overcome it. But that really, really affected them. I still think that they have enough talent to be a Final Four team next year, and they are going to be explosive enough to be a Final Four team next year, you know, if things go well. But, I mean, nothing is a lock. I mean, they're one of those teams that I look at and say, could they go 9-7 next year? Yeah.
Yep.
Could they go 13-3 next year? Yeah. They're really good, and they got to get Mathieu back. And they probably have to do something, you know, other than to try to scotch tape it together. They've got to get more pressure on the quarterback. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, you know. And I think it showed in that game the other day. Very, very intermittent, inconsistent pressure on Cam Newton. And obviously he's a different kind of quarterback, but he wasn't affected nearly enough by the Arizona front.
Peter, safe travels to San Francisco and the Bay Area. We appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad.
Here's Peter King with us, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, senior NFL writer. Great stuff there on Peyton Manning and also on the Cardinals this season. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I was talking earlier to Eric about how I'm still bothered by what's going on over Desert Vista High School. I mean, I'm a high school dad. I've had four kids go through, and I'm hearing about these girls losing their scholarships. And it was, I mean, it's a whole nother show for another day, and it's actually hours and hours. I may even write something about it today because there's a lot of levels to it, and it's not, in my view, just something you can say, this should happen and that's that. It's the end of the world, or maybe it is in some people's opinions. But I haven't seen a topic come along in our valley in a long time that's as polarizing as this one. Either you're on one side or the other. Paul Coro joins us because I want to talk to about the Suns with Paul. They play at Philadelphia tonight. He's got hazard pay duty for the rest of the year. He gets an all-expense-paid trip to Philly to see an awful basketball team, and I don't know which one is worse. But you're a Desert Vista guy, right? I mean, you've got some ties there. I don't know. Do you feel like weighing in on this one, or do you just want to talk basketball?
it's a really trying time for the community. It's a difficult one. My wife works there. My children, one graduated from there, one's there now. So it's a lot for us to go through. It's difficult to have everybody weigh in on something that they don't really fully understand or know.
Correct.
Either what's gone on or even the culture there. So yeah, it's a delicate one for me. But what I will say is I'm proud of what my wife has done in response, what the students, her students have done. She produced a video for the district that showed how the students are responding, you know, some activities that were going on campus yesterday. So you know, as with all negative things, usually something positive is born from it. And I think this in the very, very, very long run will be something good for the community to build off of.
Okay, you are very close, and I can hear it in your voice on this one. If we were to know the whole story and sit down with these girls and know the whole backstory, would the narrative that is out there now be completely turned upside down?
Well, I think some of it has started to come out too. I think what's upsetting is to me more is how peripheral people are painted, how the whole community or school or administration is painted.
Mm-hmm.
For the foolishness of a couple people. You know, it's not a systematic issue. It's you know, a lot of things start at home too, not in the school. And especially, you know, this this principal, Dr. Burrell, that's been there, and this is a school that until, you know, has had three principals, two of which were black. So it's, and administration is diverse there, and student body is more diverse than is often painted, and it's distressing to hear people's character ripped down. Dr. Borella is one of the best people you would ever meet, one of the most caring, compassionate people, and this has gone right at her heart to have this happen at our school.
And these girls losing soccer scholarships and college opportunities, I don't know where to come down on that one. I don't want to make rash judgments. And I am one of those people that don't know the whole backstory, but I just know from a distance, if my kids were at that high school, and I know that yours are, and I know that your wife teaches there, I don't know how I'd be in Philadelphia without being completely distracted today. That's just me. I'm not asking you to respond to that, but that's just me. So let us then.
Well, I feel good about what they're doing. I see positives coming out of it, like I said. And, I watched the video that my wife's broadcasting class did yesterday, and it was emotionally moving to see the way people were handling it and how they were doing. It was good.
Okay, so let's delicately as we can switch over to where you are in the team. You and I have not talked for a few months. It's not that I don't like you. I mean, I like you a lot, but there's just been no good reason. So I have to ask you, boy, there's just a lot there, and our segment is short, but is Robert tearing this thing to the ground for any reason other than he just doesn't know any better? And by that, I mean, is he tearing it to the ground, as some are suggesting, to sell it? I don't see why he would when it's worth $1 billion with a B and they haven't made the playoffs and their value of the team goes up when the team stinks. But why is he torn? Why has he let this thing just fall into disrepair?
I really don't think it was intentional. I think everything done going into this season was to break the playoff drought. You know, I think that's why they shot big with LaMarcus Aldridge and why they signed Tyson Chandler in part to get LaMarcus Aldridge and brought in some veterans like Ronnie Price and Mirsa Teletovic to balance out the roster a little bit better. I think they saw themselves and I think a lot of us, you know, me included, I was wrong about them. I thought they were in that pack of teams that was going to compete for those 7-8 spots in the West. And really it wouldn't have taken much for them to be there. You look at 8 in the West right now and it's a below 500 team. So right. It wasn't like it was asking a lot of a team to be there. And it's just gone incredibly sideways on them. And so I don't think this was intentional. I know the philosophy from the front office to ownership has never been to tank. They don't believe in it. They've studied it. They feel like it's not a productive way to do things. Build a bad culture of losing, but here they have it anyway.
Well, I mean, Paul, I feel Philadelphia's in much better shape than the Suns are. Am I missing something here? And yeah, Jerry's there. And so now they can get themselves straightened out. And yeah, he's brought Mike in. It's not just the old guard that's going there. It's, yeah, they've lost and lost and lost, and they haven't figured it out. Well, now they have some people that can figure it out. You go get Ish Smith, and all of a sudden they're a respectable team. I don't see where the Suns have done anything to pull out of this.
Yeah, it's those situations like Philadelphia are different because they have so much more flexibility. I mean, the Suns still have some flexibility, and obviously the cap's going to shoot up, and they have all their picks and some other teams' picks coming to do some things. But they also have some guys on long-term contracts, you know, Bledsoe, Knight, Chandler, whereas, you know, that you kind of bought in to be your core guys. So you're either – and Markieff, I guess, if we could throw in on that one too. He's got 3 more years. So it's a little different for them than a team like Philly that's got a lot of room and a lot of picks to do things. But the youth part of it is the same. The Suns do have some keepers. You see right now the way Devin Booker's been playing, and
TJ Warren and Devin Booker and maybe Alex Len, but why is Markieff still here? Why is that? Please explain to me, why is he still here?
overestimates what his value was. You know, it's he was hard to trade. I think he wasn't playing well. He had a reputation of handling it poorly at the time, from the summer to the things going on in the season. He had a criminal case hanging over his head. He had a contract that was going to pay him 3 more years that would ask another team to put a lot of faith in him. So there wasn't a lot of reason for somebody to send something back the Suns way.
Right. And so they're stuck. I mean, that's how I look at it with Markieff. They're stuck.
Well, what really hurt was, you know, if a team like, say, Houston was interested in him, like we've all been hearing.
Right.
Well, they just got Josh Smith back. So there goes that one. You know, so if you did have one or a handful of teams, that just got shorter.
Why is Jeff still coaching? Okay, now I like Jeff. I'm not calling for him to be gone. But he's gone, isn't he, at the end of the season? Why are we watching? I feel bad for him. Like, I've never seen a coach twist in the wind quite like Jeff Hornacek.
Well, it's just been, I talked to Reggie Miller the other day, and he says, look what he's got.
That was great stuff you had from Reggie. And I read that, and it's so true.
Look what they've done, you know, roster-wise for him. It's constantly flipped. He was a coach of the year runner-up 2 years ago to Pop, who might as well have an award named after him, so it was almost like winning. So he knew what he was doing 2 years ago. This is, you know, he's got some of this on him, too. He's got to handle people and then adjust and all that, but this team's was a difficult task to deal with. And, you know, last year was a difficult task because they threw the 3-point guards and who all wanted to start and have the ball at them and expected them to handle that. And, you know, I think there's still some belief in them, and some of it, you know, they fired 2 assistant coaches in the middle season, which is practically unprecedented as far as most people see.
But they've not extended
him. So he's got that on top of everything.
You know, that's the thing, Paul, is I'm sitting here, and are you going to do one thing or the other with this guy? Because he deserves a lot better. I just can't fathom how this organization stumbles and bumbles at every turn that it makes now. Every turn. They can't handle their coach right. As you said, unprecedented firing assistants. They got a guy that's untradeable. I mean, it's like, can you guys do something right? Devin Booker is fine. It's a nice pickup. It's a nice story. There aren't very many nice stories. It's like every facet of this organization is just run wrong. And I don't see an answer.
You know what Devin Booker feels like to me right now? He feels like Jeff Hornacek in the late 80s.
That's
me.
A good call. That's
like
a good call.
That one guy that you were like, that's the guy that we're gonna build everything around. And that's what they did then. They kept Jeff and blew up everything else and got KJ and Mark West and Ty Corbin and Chambers, and they had a good team.
Wow.
That's kind of what Devin Booker feels like to me right now, the ray of light.
All right. I don't mean to just be sitting here harping and being all negative, so I'm going to let you go off that. I enjoy your company. I enjoy visiting with you on many subjects other than just basketball. So hang in there. And I know you're doing your job to the best. Love what you do. So stay well.
Thanks. This is a big Simmons babble today. Skimming for Simmons is getting done today in Philly.
That's good. That's good. There's Paul Coro in Philadelphia, where tonight the Suns play the Sixers. Some of you get on my case because you say you are so negative and you're so down on the Suns. Please explain to me how else anybody who cares. See, I care. Okay, I'm not a season ticket holder. I'm not even a fan. It's just, how can we have a team in complete, utter, total disrepair? Utter. You hear it from Paul. He's trying to figure out Markieff. I mean, there's nothing to say on that. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks again to Paul Coro. If you missed any of Paul or Peter King, the Monday Morning Quarterback, it will be up on our website later today, the podcast at sports360az.com. The show also repeats all day long and night long, and it's both on sports360az.com. And for those of you checking us out on AZ Central Sports, who we proudly partner with, you can check out the replays throughout the day and the night. We are 7 days away, 8 days away from National Letter of Intent Day in college football. And there's going to be plenty of content. There is plenty of content, but a lot more. We're making a real strong push here in the next week on a national level and a local level of what's going on, not just kids that are here, because I know you college football guys, you're from all around the country. The top defensive lineman from the state, who is at Hamilton High School, Garrett Rand, is committed to Wisconsin. He took a visit to UCLA, a mysterious visit to UCLA over the weekend. So Jared's been working behind the scenes and poked in on that. So we'll keep an eye on that. And that type of content you can find up on our website at sports360az.com. I think next Wednesday, we were going to go to the Super Bowl, obviously, if the Cardinals went. And I thought about even going if they didn't. Don't need to go. Been to Super Bowls, been there, done that. So we'll have plenty of guests on from the Super Bowl. Peter will be with us from there. Jake will be with us. We had Kevin Harlan yesterday. Jim Nantz, we'll shoot him a text. And we'll shoot some others. We'll see what we get. Because there's plenty to talk about, not just around the Super Bowl and the matchup with Cam and Peyton, but also the Cardinals in the future. I think the overriding question with the Cardinals is, how does Carson Palmer come back next year? And how tolerant are fans going to be next year? It's one thing if you have a bad season or a bad game and the NFC title game and you're, I don't know, 25, 26. Peter brought up Andy Dalton's name earlier, and Carson's no Andy Dalton to me. Carson's towards the end of his career. Dalton's in the middle of his career. There's been this belief in Cincinnati and talking with friends there that they're never going to get over the top with Andy Dalton there. I think Carson has gotten them as very close, obviously. I still have faith in him, but man, is this guy's getting torched here in town from what I'm seeing in social media and just even my email, that I'm being too protective. I don't think I'm being too protective at all. I think I'm being a realist here, that the organization has a decision to make here in the offseason as they evaluate their roster. Are they going to be dug into the quarterbacks that they have presently on the roster? Are they going to use a high draft pick? They're picking 29th now. So 29th, the Cardinals will draft. Steve Keim is already out of Arizona. He's down at Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. He's already there. And I'm sure there's other organizations that are going to be looking at who is Steve Keim talking to, because Steve Keim is the guy that finds these people in the middle of nowhere, the David Johnsons of the world and the John Browns of the world and the J.J. Nelsons, and says, that's my guy, that's my guy, that's my guy. And then they come here and, well, why are they not guys from Alabama? You know, why are they not from the top football programs across the country and all that? So I do think that question is going to linger for many people. I think even myself. You know, if it's one damaged finger to Carson Palmer, and he pulled himself out of the Pro Bowl yesterday, and Larry pulled himself out of the Pro Bowl yesterday, which is fine by me. I'm not one of these guys that I don't refer to guys by how many Pro Bowls they go to, because it's fine for you. It's fine as a fan. Pro Bowl, just say I'm a 10-time Pro Bowl player. I don't know. The rules are all over the place on that, so I don't put much stock or credence into it. So, but for Carson, it says to me quite straightforward that the finger is worse. Eric, you were out there yesterday. Did he go into that at all? I did not make it out there yesterday.
He just said his finger wasn't an issue. I know Arians after the game was pretty defiant,
yeah.
In saying that the finger wasn't an issue, and he kind of just played it off. I mean, who really knows how bad it is? Because internally, they're not going to say anything, even if it is bad. I mean, you can look at the numbers pre-injury to post-injury.
Draw your own conclusion.
Yeah, it's a pretty his quarterback rating takes a pretty significant dip.
Yeah.
But, again, it's just one of those things that the organization decided that's the route they're going to go, kind of keeping that on the down low or trying to keep it on the down low. But facts are facts.
You know what's going
to
happen on that? This will be one of those. I was playing golf with Seth Joyner last week, and we were just talking about players and that. And he said, you know, there was this player and that player. And we're just swapping stories of guys that I've covered through the years that when they're done 5 years, 10 years, 15 years later, they'll tell you things that if it would have got out, like, okay, and or that they played through this or they played through that.
Yeah, Palmer will come clean and say, hey, by the way, remember that finger injury 10 years ago? Yeah, I had surgery on that midweek, and I flew out to fill right. in the blank.
Couldn't
and
hold nobody, a coffee cup.
Yeah, nobody knew about it,
yeah,
but
right.
now that it's 10 years later, yeah, I can talk about later. It. See this big scar going down the inside of my finger? Right. That's why.
See how they had to amputate? That's why.
I played with a rubber finger for the last that's 3 it. Years of my career.
That's it. Oh, gosh. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now, sports360AZ.com. If you're just finding us, we've been doing our thing just over here where we are Sprouts and Whole Foods in a world of Walmart, guys. That's what we are. We're just over here. We're not waving up and down, jumping up and down. Just we do our thing. Hungry staff, hungry, humble, and hustle. That's our thing, the three H's. And we'll talk with you later.